You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Joining me now is Robert Flom at Rich Homie Flom on Twitter. Hey man, what is going on? And how are you enjoying, as you, of course, run Clips Nation, among other things, how are you just enjoying knowing that you're going to cover Paul George and Kawhi Leonard next year?
I'm enjoying it a pretty fair amount. I wish I was actually in LA. I actually moved to Michigan very recently. So I won't be covering them in person, but it's still exciting. I get to write about them. I think they'll probably be the best team in the NBA next year if they're fully healthy. And if, you know, obviously if superstars gel, it can take some time for that to happen. But they should be really, really good. Their supporting cast is excellent. And I think they won't only be good, but I think they should be pretty fun to watch. I know tons of people are really excited to see how Kawhi and PG will play together, how they'll work in other guys like Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Pat Beverly, all seem like pretty good fits, but you never know. So there's some intrigue with all the new pieces, but I'm just excited to watch some, you know, top level basketball again. It's been a few years since the height of Lob City, and the Clippers have gone through, I wouldn't say they've gone to any super down places, but it hasn't always been a smooth road the past few years.
All right, so you are in, of course, covering this team where they have revamp the roster. It's going to be a different tone. One guy that is not going to be back on that team, and I want to first ask if you're surprised by this, is Nderis Thornwell. So people don't know, he signed with the Cavs. It's a one-year contract. Basically, it seems like he's someone that they're going to give a chance to. Basically, it's I don't think we know, like, 100% if the money is guaranteed. I'd be surprised if it wasn't, but it's a chance for him to come in, play, be in a rotation, and then hit the market again next summer and maybe either, you know, go back to the Cavs on longer term deal or go somewhere else that kind of wants his services. But when you were looking at just how the Clippers were going to surround Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and Trez and all these guys that they already have, and he was a guy that they ended up just parting ways with after having him for 2 years. And, of course, he didn't play as much last year, which we'll get into. But were you surprised that he was shown the door in this post-Kawhi, Paul George reality?
A little bit. They really, really like Sindarius. They loved him in the locker room. They liked his energy, his toughness. He was really a guy who embodied what the modern Clippers ethos is, which is this blue-collar, gritty, you know, team headlined by Pat Beverly and Montrezl Harrell. He fit in perfectly with those guys. They all loved him. Media certainly loved him. You're going to enjoy covering him. He talks, he answers questions, he's really funny, seems like a great guy. So Cavs fans can look forward to that. But it was a little surprising just because I knew how much they liked him. But on the other hand, he doesn't shoot, like, at all. I'm sure we can get into that a little bit more. But he's basically a non-shooter at this point. Clippers shooting around Kawhi and Paul George and around the Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell pick and roll. They need guys who space the floor, and Sindarius is not going to do that. They also have been able to acquire a bunch of veterans who will fit in ahead of him, who are just better than he is at this point, like Rodney Magruder, Mo Harkless, and then promising youngsters like Landry Shamet and, to a lesser extent, Jerome Robinson, who they probably also want to give minutes to over Thornwell. And there's certainly a place on the roster for his type of energy and his defensive attitude and mindset. But I think really it was honestly probably more of a favor to him than anything else, just to let him go somewhere where he was more likely to get playing time and be able to, you know, bolster that into a bigger deal in a year or two. So I think really they might have been okay with keeping him. But I think it was probably just they liked him well enough to actually just let him go and be somewhere else instead of being the 15th man, on their bench who will get like a handful of minutes. So they're going to miss him in the locker room, but there just really wasn't much of a spot for him on the roster this year.
So we'll get into the shooting. It's I think, the biggest red flag for him as a prospect. But for you, what do you think of for him as, like, how would you just describe him as a player? Like, in terms of what he's going to provide, what Cavs fans can maybe expect from him when he's on the court. I think if you watch some of the stuff, you'll kind of some of tape of him, you'll kind of get an idea. But what is just his, what are his defining characteristics as a player?
I think his biggest strength is defense. Doc Rivers last year almost exclusively used him in defense only situations, is why he played in 64 games, but averaged 5 minutes. Garbage time games where he played like, you know, 15 to 20 minutes. There were probably 15 or 20 games where he came in for under a minute, where he came in for end of quarter, end of half, you know, specifically out of a timeout in clutch situations, stuff like that. And Doc Rivers, as a lot of people know, not necessarily super trusting young players, certainly not for such important possessions with defense only. There were a ton of veterans on the team who were known for their defense. Pat Beverly, Avery Bradley earlier in the year, Garrett Temple. But Sindarius Thornall consistently got those minutes. He did well with them. He's just a really good defender. He's not super big. He's listed as 6'5". I'd say he's probably a little shorter than that. But he is a thick, like, super solid defender. He can defend bigger guys in the post. He has very long arms. He can contest shots. And he's very quick for a guy his size. I mean, he looks kind of like PJ Tucker almost in terms of build. But he is really quick on the perimeter. He can cut off point guards at the point of attack. I mean, I'd say, you know, he probably can't do much against guys like, you know, Giannis or LeBron, but not many people can. Really, I think he can guard basically 1 through 4 fairly well. There are still some bigger power forwards who might be able to just get over him. But, I mean, he's a very good defender. And outside of that, he just plays with a lot of energy. He's always diving on the ball. He's going for loose balls. His energy just never really wavers, which is part of what endeared him to guys like Pat Beverly and Montrezl Harrell. So those are really the two things, I think, is defense and energy. His limited offensive game does play better in up-tempo. And I know the Cavs are a fairly young team with young guards, and if they try to play at a fast pace, it could actually really help him to get out and transition. Because he is a solid enough finisher around the basket, that's probably his best offensive characteristic. And then he's an okay free throw shooter. Doesn't really get to the line very much because he doesn't have the ball in his hands. But that, you know, that's, you know, a nice little thing. He's an okay free throw shooter. But yeah, really, I mean, it's defense. You plug him into the game, you can expect defense at a bunch of positions, lots of energy, and a guy who just will never quit on a game and or any really situation. He's a good fit for, you know, that like a 9th, 10th man energy role.
So the Cavs, I think, are kind of a good fit for him, just because I look at what their roster is, and you look at they lost David Nwaba, they drafted they're adding 3 rookies to a team that was already very bad at defense. This is like not going to be a good defensive team, you know. Like, there's just no way this team is going to be defensive, and I just think like if you're Sindarius. This just, to me, seems like if he's going to come in and play somewhere, this is a very logical place for me to say, okay, this just makes a lot of sense. Like, it's sort of simplistic to say that, but if you look at, like, him maybe on the pick between places not for a lot of money or whatever, but, like, in terms of place where he could come in and, like, stand out, this seems like a case. Now, let's just talk about his offense, because people can look at defensive RPM, look at his tape. He's a good defender. When I watch film, and I remember watching him playing on the Clippers these last couple of years, the lack of a shot is like a problem. And I would argue that like guys like him and Nwaba, funnily enough, kind of get undervalued and lost in the shuffle because like the league just is like so tilted towards that end of the floor right now. But like he also like is not a threat. Like Nwaba at least was shooting like 30-something% last year. Thornwell just, like, does not have a 3-point shot. He's not, like, really good at driving off attacking closeouts. He can, like, do it against, like, really sloppy closeouts, but he's not going to, like, beat a guy off the dribble ever. Doesn't seem like he cuts a lot, and some of that could be the system. You would know better than me, but, like, is there anything on offense where you're like, okay, this is at least something he can provide, so he's not just, like, an Andre Roberson type on that end of the floor?
Yeah, I mean, he last year he really only played for defensive possessions, so he didn't really have
Was the offensive issues the cause of that, or is there another cause to like why he just kind of got bumped after playing like 16, 17 minutes his first year in the league?
It was really just that they added a bunch of guys who were just better than him. Was part of the issue. He might have played more over the second half of the year if they hadn't cut Landry Shamet, and if Shamet hadn't been so good right away. They went small a lot because they had so many good guards that, you know, they had to play Shea, Pat Beverly, Shamet, Lou Williams. So they went small a lot, and that didn't really leave a lot of room for him. He's more of a 2-3. And if you're playing three guards, there weren't that many minutes. But like you said, I mean, the shooting is just the biggest thing for him. He really just cannot shoot. When you look at his stats, his first year, he was 37.7%, but he only took 61 of them, which is obviously a very limited sample size. And when you look at the film, I mean, it just bears it out. His shot is not very good. It's just not smooth. He has a bit of a hitch. The touch is pretty bad. So the shot will be a work in progress, but you know, he can finish around the basket, I'd say. So if, you know, John Beilein has a very ball movement heavy offense. I'm a Michigan fan. I've watched him for years. And I think Zdarius could be able to do stuff, you know, out of the dunker spot, just making smart cuts to the basket. He is a smart basketball player. But in terms of offensive skills, I mean, he's not a very good passer. His handles are rudimentary. The offensive game is definitely quite limited, at least in the NBA. What's weird and what, you know, might give cause for hope is that his senior year at South Carolina, he averaged 21 points per game on reasonably good efficiency, 44% from the field, 39% from three on 5 shot attempts a game. He got to the line 8.5 times, 2.8 assists. I mean, he could do a lot of stuff. And I mean, the SEC isn't, you know, obviously anywhere near the NBA level, but I mean, he still has some offensive tools to be able to do that. So I think partially some of it is just like his confidence was sapped. He didn't get a lot of minutes, and so he just gave up completely on his shot. And I think, you know, that I don't know if the Cavs have a shot doctor type of coach, but that could do wonders just for getting him, you know, his head back in the game offensively. In order to do that kind of stuff, he had to be able to, you know, at least have some creation. But I think, again, the 8.5 free throws speaks to his ability to kind of get into the paint and finish and draw contact. So I think your best bet would be utilizing him as more of a cutter, really. At least in the NBA so far, he's not shown any ability to play with the ball in his hands. So, you know, if you're running him alongside Garland and Sexton at three, that might be okay because those guys are going to need the ball. And he can just fill in doing defense and, you know, making cuts and getting out in transition.
So what in terms of your in terms of you, what you think his fit is with the Cavs, what you think his, you know, role could be, do you like this fit for him as a player?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think if it was going to be any role, it would be either kind of what he was in last year, is like a very set specialist on a good team, you know, just playing a very small role and carving that out. Or, you know, on a team like the Cavs, who are probably not going to be very good, also filling a role, but just one slightly higher up the food chain. I think for like, again, like an end of the rotation guy, like a ninth or 10th man who gets, you know, 12 to 15 minutes a game, you know, he's going to come in, he's going to play defense, which, as you mentioned, he's going to be one of only like a couple guys on the Cavs who will
Well, I'm gonna
probably
just say
even be
this. In terms
trying to
of
play
wings,
defense.
he's the defensive wing. So, like, just to run through this really quick, if you're gonna include guards in this, because they'll defend point of attack stuff, you have Garland and Sexton, both of whom are gonna be bad on defense. They're young guards. That's just part of the process. Delly, you know, he could be athletically. He just athletically is just kind of has declined and like just isn't quite the same guy. Brandon Knight showed no maturity in defense last year. Don't even get me started on Jordan Clarkson. And then you get to the wing. It's like Jetty tries, but like he's not good yet. And maybe defending guys more of his size will help, but that's a problem. And then you have Wendler, Kevin Porter Jr. I don't think you're looking at like wings that are good defensively. Like he's clearly like if they were to like if you were to tell me like the Cavs had to send one guy out and like defend LeBron for one possession and like just for like to save the franchise or something like that, Thornwell's like the only guy I would pick. Like it's
Yeah,
like
I
Thompson
mean
and Nance, the only other two
that
good
is a
defenders
great
on the team.
list.
They
Yeah,
were the
that
worst defensive team in the league last year, one of the worst ever. They're gonna be maybe worse this year.
Yeah, that's really bad. I'm looking at their roster right now. That's real rough. Yeah, I mean, and coaches, you know, media might not appreciate defense, and front offices maybe don't appreciate it as much, but coaches do. And you know, John Beilein is going to be searching for guys who can play defense. And, you know, even on a team that's not going to be very good, that doesn't mean, like, you know, the whole tanking thing is obviously – is sometimes a misnomer, because it's not like most of the players want to lose or the coaching staff wants to lose. It's like a front office direction. And the Cavs are rebuilding, but that doesn't mean they don't want to win games, and you have to have at least some defense out there. So, I mean, I think his ideal role is probably a smaller one, but it would not shock me at all if – you know, in training camp, he's the only perimeter guy playing defense. And John Beilein's like, hey, we might start him at the three just so we're not giving up like 130 points a game in just in pick and roll and to opposing guards and wings. Yeah. It would not surprise me at all. I think, you know, Chetty is the overall, you know, I don't know how they're going to use Sexton and Garland together. You'll know that a lot better than me.
We have no idea. You might know better than me because you've, like, watched Michigan and, like, know Beilein better than I do. I have no idea right now. Like, you could tell me, like, they were going to start Sexton, Garland, Osman, Thompson, and Love at the five. And I'd be like, okay. And then you could tell me, like, tomorrow it's going to be Love at the five, which I don't know how much you want to do that with Thornwell, Osman, Garland and Sack. I like, there's just like, we don't know really. And it's just, it's, you would honestly have a, like, maybe a better idea than me.
So yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, like the last lineup you mentioned, like I said, Thornwell, it's probably a little bit too much to ask for him to bang against power forwards every night, but I think certainly he can defend a lot of those guys as the league has gone smaller. You know, like the Clippers last year played a lot of guys at the four, like Tobias Harris and Jamichael Green and Mike Scott. Sindarius Thornwell can guard all of those guys. He's giving up some height, but like I said, he has really long arms. He really gets up into people. You know, I think, you know, that would be an interesting lineup to throw out there. Also, his limited offensive repertoire would probably matter a little bit less if he's playing the four than if he was playing, like, shooting guard, for example. So, yeah, I think I would not be surprised if he ended up getting a fair amount of minutes next year, because he's very, very good defensively. You know, the question is just, can he stay on the court offensively? And will the Cavs even be, like, you know, will they just punt on defense? Like, it's hard to imagine the NBA coaching staff doing that. So I'm going to guess he's going to be in the rotation, and he might end up carving out a nice role because, like you mentioned, their perimeter defense is going to be atrocious.
So what do you think he has considered? He's 25, been in the league for 2 years. Is there upside to him as a prospect?
I think so. I mean, the lack of kind of offensive creation and skill means he's probably never going to be that good. But I think, you know, there's something there with his shot. I mean, his last 2 years in college, he took over four a game. Between the two of them, he averaged around 36%. That's a far cry from what we've seen in the NBA. Like, I think really maybe some tweaks to his shot and just some confidence could get him to at least, like, a threat from out there. And if he gets there, I think you're looking at, like, a guy who could be, like, a real rotation player on a pretty good team, which for a contract at the minimum for a team like the Cavs is really good value. I mean, in terms of, like, long-term, like, high upside, I don't know about that. But, I mean, I think he could have, you know, a 10-year career as an NBA role player if he's able to get that shot down. If not, he's probably going to be drifting more around the fringes, you know, because I don't know how much the handles or any of, like, the shot creation or playmaking will develop. So for him, really, for me, all the upside just comes down to, will he be able to at least be, even if not really a threat, at least be a guy who teams have to be aware of from three, because last year he was not. You know, if he can at least shoot four threes a game or five per 36 minutes and hit, you know, 33% even, you know, he's got a nice NBA career, I think.
Just kind of last thing on this. When you think about his, like, if there's just, like, what your expectations would be, just considering what you know about Beilein, what you just, the situation he's coming into, just what would you say would be, like, a successful-looking season for him if he does get a chance to play with the Cavs and does get a chance to, if he doesn't, even if he doesn't start, like, be someone that at least is getting 15 to 22 minutes a game or something?
I'd say a successful season would be around 20 minutes a game. Maybe he's, like, the seventh man off the bench. He comes in, he's one of the first guys. He checks in to help, you know, bring some defense to the game behind whoever the Cavs are trotting out there. You know, maybe if, in terms of numbers, like 6-7 points a game on, like, you know, okay percentages. Again, very low volume. You know, maybe adding a few rebounds. But just a guy, I mean, I'd expect his on-off numbers to be pretty good. So I think he'll be a guy who, you know, if his season is successful, he's able to get, at least get, like, the remote threat of a shot down. He's a guy who will make the Cavs better when he's on the court, and fans might want to see more invested more in, you know, like Kevin Porter Jr. and, you know, obviously the young guards who are kind of, you know, the future of the franchise. You know, even if they're better with Sindarius out there, I mean, again, the upside, I think, is fairly limited. So I think 20 minutes a game, a guy who just makes them better, a guy who fans really appreciate for his energy and his defense, and who Beeline can use on bigger wings, and just any perimeter player really who can score and needs to be checked down a bit, and just, yeah, make his name that way. And honestly, maybe price himself out of the team next year would probably be the most successful season for him.
Yeah, the Cavs will be in a position, I think, at least like if he does work out, if this is a situation where they can get a lot out of him and turn him into like a good player. They will be able to at least look at this guy and like pay him, because they are going to have like a ton of cap space next summer. And even if they eat like some bad contract and flipping their expiring, it's like, there's just no way they're not going to have some money next summer. So I think it makes sense for both parties to make this a 1 year deal. But like, I do think that if he works out, like he absolutely could be kind of like a rotation piece for them for like the next like 3 years or something like that. And I don't think that's bad business for late in the summer, when you had no really other flexibility. I think like this is like the exact when, especially when Nwaba went to Brooklyn, and Stauskas like was kind of taken off the table because he's not playing in Spain, and just seems like the Cavs didn't really want to bring him back. This is like I think the right kind of move for where the Cavs are at right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think he'll play a fair amount. I really do think he'll do well. He's a hard worker. He's a really good guy. You're going to like covering him. You're going to enjoy watching him. And if I had to throw a comp out there to a former Cavs player, I'd say maybe a shorter Alonzo G could be a good comp for him.
I mean, I think so, yeah. That is either going to give people like, oh, like that's not a bad signing, or like, oh my God, Alonzo G is back. It's one of those two things if people hear that. It's either one.
I mean, he's younger and he doesn't have an actual contract yet. So I think on the minimum, people really enjoy him. But I mean, I could certainly see a similar thing happening where he sticks around like an extra couple years and the shot doesn't develop and then people get sick of him. But I think next year, I really do think he's going to play, and I think people will really enjoy him.
Yeah. You can find Robert on Twitter at RichHomieFlam. He writes at places like Blazers Edge, runs Clips Nation, and a whole bunch of other places. Hey, thanks so much for coming on, man, as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me.